Welcome, Capital Raisers. Reed Goossens came on and broke down his crazy scaling and how he learned quite a bit about raising capital, storytelling, and creating international exposure along the way. Are you guys ready to raise? Shout out to the Family Office Club and our newest show sponsor, InvestNext. Whether you have 5 million or 500 million AUM, InvestNext delivers an institutional grade experience to your investors and automates tasks like K-1 distributions with a single click. With that, it's Capital Raiser Show, episode 298, and it starts now. Rock and roll, I got Reed Goossens on the Capital Raiser Show. Welcome, my brother.
Good to be here. We've been rescheduling this for like six times. I know you've been a busy man. I've been a busy man. So I'm really glad we can finally nail this down.
Yeah, this would be fun. For the audience that doesn't know Reed, tell us a little bit about your background. How did you got in commercial real estate syndication?
Well, yep, originally from Australia, as you can tell. My West Texas accent gives it away. Moved out here in 2012, chasing a girl. My background's in structural engineering. I worked for better part of a decade around the globe on different infrastructure projects, all the way from mining to multifamily to the 2012 Olympic Games, actually, in London. And moved to the States, moved to New York, started learning about real estate here and picked up my first triplex, $38,000 back in the day. Fast forward to today, RSN Property Group, through a couple of other different companies I've founded. I've controlled now about 4,500 units, nearly a bit over 800 million, I think it is. We've got 23 deals in the portfolio. We've sold five of them, have a sixth one being sold right now. My whole spiel is I don't try to boast. I'm just trying to be here, tell it how it is. I had visa issues moving here. I didn't have a job, didn't have a green card. And if I can do it, you guys can do it. So hopefully this interview will be inspirational, if anything.
Cool. Capital Raiser Show Season 4, powered by the Family Office Club. Shout out to InvestNext, our newest sponsors on the show. So I wanted to dive a little bit further because you had visa issues. You mentioned that you were chasing a girl. I don't know if she's still in the picture or not. But
look at that. It's big ring, mate.
That's awesome, man. Tell us a little bit more. The triplex, how did that scale you into the syndication? What happened after that?
It all started with just like, how many doors can I buy with the limited amount of money that I started with? And I'd saved some money through being a corporate guy. I was 26, 27 at the time. I probably had saved $30,000 or $40,000. And I bought my first triplex all cash for $38,000. Like, it was a triplex. It was the most amount of doors I could afford. And I was living in New York City. Obviously, I couldn't afford anything in New York City. So it was in Syracuse, upstate New York, where I could actually afford it. And leading up to that, Ruben, up to 2012, I was already educating myself in Australia about doing real estate. I picked up the book Rich Dad Poor Dad in 2010. That really started the seed from within, or the fire from within, I should say. And so when I moved to the US, it was like, I've got to keep this ball going. And then add on top of that, the incredible tapestry of networking that you have here in the US compared to other countries, it was just like on steroids, you know, the RIAs across every MSA, and just really awesome access. This is pre-podcast. This is pre-YouTube blowing up. This is pre-guru. And you could only get those people through going to your local RIA events. And I was doing that and taking information from a fire hose and knowing too well that I needed to get involved in a deal, because I was never going to, it was coming to a point where I was like, I was getting analysis paralysis. I couldn't just keep reading about it. I had to go do it and make mistakes along the way. So, yeah.
I'm curious about the other businesses. How many businesses have you launched? What are they?
Well, not other businesses, other partnerships. I launched another company called Wildhorn Capital. I was a co-founder of that company, and partnerships are awesome, but it came to an end. Still good mates. I still have all my co-GP interests, but I built it for that thing from scratch, and we decided to go our separate ways. And partnerships are really, really good in the beginning, but they're like a marriage. Not all of them last, but I wouldn't be here today talking about what I've achieved without that sort of step in the journey, or that chapter in the journey, so to speak.
Any learning lessons that you've experienced?
Oh, huge. You know, massive.
From the partnerships particularly?
It was hard to walk away. If you truth be told, it was a tough thing to say, what I need to go in a different direction here. We're not aligned anymore. And what I want to happen in the next 10 years is different probably to what you want to have happen in the next 10 years. And we had a third partner come in, and it just didn't, two companies, three's a crowd, and didn't feel like what I wanted to do. And probably looking back on it, I was probably more when you have a partnership, it's like a yin and a yang, right? You want to be able to find someone who has complementary skill sets to yourself. You never want to have two people doing the same thing. That's not the point. Starting a business, there's so many hats to wear. You need to divide and conquer. One of the things that I came from, the institutional world of ground up construction and asset management and just structural engineering. So I had that sort of institutional way of thinking about stuff and how the big boys do it. And my business partner had more boots on the ground. He played a lot more golf. He was a country club type of guy. And we sort of came together. And that was really great because I built out the systems in asset management, construction management. He was more like taking brokers to lunch and that sort of stuff. And that was what I was missing early on in my career. And then as you build this pedestal, it becomes, where does this want to go? And he was very focused on staying in Central Texas. I wanted to expand it across the country, knowing that like this, what I was doing in Central Texas could be done in Phoenix, could be done in South Carolina, could be done in Florida, could be done in Boise, Idaho, could be done in Alaska, could potentially even be done in Australia. I've come from halfway around the world, like limiting myself to one region of the country. I sort of was thinking a little bit bigger than that and potentially even other asset classes. So just trying to diversify. And that's, it's not necessarily a bad thing. At the time, it was probably emotionally, you can ask my wife, emotionally charged. But looking back on it, it's provided incredible amounts of wealth that I could never have dreamt of. I only quit my job working for that developer that I mentioned earlier only 5 years ago. So Andrew and I had already done 4 lead syndications at that point. And the reason I could quit the job at that time was because I'd married the girl and got the green card. So it was like all the sort of things that fell into place, kismet or not kismet, if you believe in that stuff. And as painful as it was to walk away, it was also knowing that I've already done it once, I've already built it once. It's just building it again and you're not losing anything. You're building around it and you're moving, you know, it's a different direction that you're going in.
Okay. Love it. All right. Let's talk about the commercial scaling. So like, I don't know if you had any experience being the leader of people and having people look up to you and having to show up at all times and be that person that gives instruction. So how was that for you?
Coming from that world of structural engineering, leading projects, being head project manager, being like for 5 years prior to me quitting my full-time job, I was working for a developer in Los Angeles as their owner's representative on site. So I'd be interfacing with general contractors, with architects, with engineers, like the whole kit and boodle with the city. I was the puppeteer to make sure it all came together, representing my boss. And that's what my role was. I was young at the time and I learned really quickly. And any business you get into is around people management, right? It's in today's business, it's about managing investor expectations. It's managing on-site property manager. It's about managing your general contractors. It's about managing your subs. It's about managing the people who work around your asset managers and so on. It's about managing your bank relationships, broker relationships. So it's all about people management. And the sooner you can pick up those skills, the easier it will become to scale, back to your question. I still today have problems with letting go, but I now have 6 employees where 6-7 years ago, I had 0 employees. It was me and Andrew just building it from scratch. So things have changed for the better. But that also makes me as a leader have to change as well in how I delegate and how I think about things today than compared to what I think about things 6 or 7 years ago.
Okay, cool. What about on the marketing side? Who handles that? You mentioned you had a friend that was a kind of country club kind of guy. Have you gotten into that side of the business, like going out and raising capital?
Yep. So we raise all our capital ourselves. Well, not all of it. We use co-GPs as well and funder funds. But we do I started a podcast many years ago called Investing in the US. I've written 2 books. I have an online presence. I've done that from 2014. It was always a personal brand thing that I wanted to know that the way you build credibility very quickly is through telling a story, is through building trust through a story. So I've been podcasting for over 8 years now, 450 episodes. Through those online digital assets, I've been able to branch off and create a small name for myself, and that's been able to create a bit of a following. And from that following, you can raise capital. Today, we're trying to throw petrol on that through Facebook ads, through different types of funnels to enhance the way we attract retail capital. And that's retail capital has been the major focus. We're now starting, as we've gotten runs on the board, as we've gotten more experienced, we are now starting to approach family offices, private equity, to talk about partnerships. But truth be told, the most profitable you're going to be as a sponsor is with retail investors, right? You can 70-30 splits, all that sort of stuff, you go to private equity family offices, you're probably going to get whittled down to nothing. So, but there's a double-edged sword there. The family office and private equity doesn't want to talk to you until you've got your experience, and you've got to get your experience through friends and family and doing a couple of deals first. So it's, you got to have all the buckets able to call on for as you grow as a real estate syndicator, as a business.
So when you talk about like story selling and telling a story, what kind of stories do you have? Or are there ones, or are you just talking about in general, hey, this is what we do?
No, like the story that I started with when I first started the podcast was, I'm originally from Australia. I'm moving to this country. I'm talking about the incredible cash flow opportunities here. I'm talking about how you get set up here in the US, EIN numbers, LLCs, opening bank accounts. Like, you got to do all that if you're an American investor or not American investor. And that was the story that I was talking about, because I was learning about it in real time. The other story I talk about is, I was a structural engineer with needing a visa to stay here. Well, I also figured out, well, I can go and use the skill sets that I already have and go and work for someone in the real estate world, or it could be in whatever world you're interested in, because you have a skill set, and you can be paid the highest amount of money in a corporate America whilst learning on the job and still doing your business on the side. And so that's another lesson that's come out of this entire journey. Like, the building you can see in the background, that was one of the first deals I ever developed with the developer. So I was like, I'm sick of being an engineer, but I have a skill set I could use. Hey, I'm going to approach a bunch of developers. They saw value in that. And then thus they said, yeah, I'm going to employ you. So now I'm surrounded by real estate 24/7, because I was also doing real estate on the side in my side hustle. And then as that side hustle started to grow, I could then quit the job, green cards, all that good stuff. So yeah.
Out of curiosity, any war stories on any of your projects?
My first projects were back when I bought the triplex. Like, that was a drive-by shooting, my first ever deal. It was a Section 8 housing. Like, I did my first fix and flip in Philadelphia. Had my dad invested in the deal, had general contractors steal from me, use it on other jobs, didn't make any money on the first deal, actually lost some money, but I made sure my dad was made whole. Like, I've had the issues happen already on smaller scales. On the larger scale stuff, touch wood, I haven't had anything happen yet, but there's been lessons along the way. What we are in today's environment with rising interest rates, we've earned our stripes going through COVID, not necessarily war stories, but they're lessons that you learn to make you a better operator for the next deal.
Cool. And when you consider the future, is there a specific number of units that you kind of want to accomplish? Is it more about just, hey, let's see what kind of an impact we can make? How do you look at the future?
I want to be a global company. So when I say global, I do want to do stuff back in Australia. Australia doesn't have multifamily, but it's got self-storage, it's got other commercial real estate. And I want to take what I've learned here and apply it back there. But I want to be a sort of an international company in terms of an investment company. I also want to invest vertically, having an ecosystem of businesses. So property management, supply companies, other businesses that feed into the overall real estate business is really, really powerful in terms of creating long-term wealth. It's not, well, obviously real estate is a fundamental, but if you can add other profitable businesses in there to that and have an ecosystem, then that's really, really like the bee's knees. In terms of giving impact, we are obviously investing in Class B, Class C housing. We have tax abatement deals where we've got affordability deals that we own in the portfolio. So we think affordability is a massive issue and will continue to be a massive issue. Mm-hmm. So we're driven by making sure that, you know, people here in the US get access to somewhat sort of a affordable-esque type of rent. We're obviously a for-profit company. We're going to make our investors profit, but in the same time, we can also make profit and do good. They don't have to be in separate. They can be together.
Okay, cool. And then in regards to the economic times, how is it impacting your business? How are you dealing with the high interest rates?
Higher interest rates are because you can do as well as you can on producing NOI and keeping the effective rent growing by double digits. But if you've got a rate cap and your interest rate has gone from 4% to 6%, well, that's over 50% growth. It's going to hurt. It's going to affect cash flow. So we're being very careful about the deals we've put under contract today, about the type of debt we put on the deals. I do have a sneaking suspicion that we're going to see a 2008-esque type of issue with multifamily, particularly in the retail side. There's deals that I know today that are people losing their shirt over. So trying to see opportunities in today's environment, I don't think these quote unquote higher interest rates will be forever, but we're going to see them for the next foreseeable future, call it 6 months or so, until the inflation has really broken the back of inflation. So what we're doing today, we're focusing on what we can control on all our assets. You know, we've got, I think, one asset with floating rate debt, which is the problem child, but we're, you know, still moving that ball down the fairway. Everything else is on fixed rate debt, so that's good. And then we're looking to acquire new assets. But the hard thing with acquiring new assets today is trying to attract equity. That's been really tough. I think the last 7, 8, 9 years has been a big boom since the 2012 Jobs Act came in, with retail investors flooding into commercial real estate. We're starting to see a pullback now. People aren't as bullish on it because they're starting to see capital calls. They're starting to see, you know, deals not go south. And that's as a result of higher interest rates. It doesn't necessarily mean it's a fundamental of the deal problem. It just must, it's a fundamental of how they financed it. And it's depending on how long that operator was going to hold on, will be able to hold on for, to see if the deal is going to be able to right size itself, yeah, and come out the other side. So a lot's going to have to happen in the next 6 to 12 months. I mean, if you're listening to anything of Jay Powell was saying at Jackson Hole, he wasn't very clear. You know, you couldn't really read between the lines of where we're going. Are we keeping interest rates going up? We're cutting. But look back at history and you see back all the recessions we've had. The cutting of interest rates is their tool to use when, excuse my language, shit hits the fan, when we are in a recession. They're not going to cut. If inflation's under control, they're not going to cut for no reason. They're going to cut when things go bad. And so what is going to go bad for them to force them to cut? And I'm of the opinion, like, hurry up and break it so we can cut. Like, it's just, let's get this over with. It's this slow moving train wreck needs to be faster, and let's have the train wreck already and get on with it.
Hilarious. Last thing that I'm kind of curious about here is, what is your business model? Like, what cities, how long do you want to hold these apartments? Are you even investing in apartments now? Are you doing some of the self-storage? Because I see a lot of multifamily value add syndicators moving out and getting into self-storage or even construction and development or built rent in my case.
So still holistically value add multifamily across, we're in Central Texas, Phoenix, Carolinas. We want to expand into other markets, maybe North Carolina. We are doing our first build for rent project in St. Marcus, Texas, 66 units. We've got a second build for rent project in the pipeline. Nice. That will be a 90 unit townhome. We do believe building right now is when the cost of existing assets is nearly about the cost of building a new asset. You kind of want to go build some more new stuff, but the cost of borrowing is obviously gone out the window. Lending is where I believe we're in restrictive territory right now in terms of how lenders are looking at new projects. So we're just trying to do the best deals we can. We've got to look at more deals. There's less deals on the market to look at. So in general, we're trying to be a bit more focused on still be value add, but starting to expand the portfolio. We're also looking at starting a debt fund, a hard money debt fund, to help keep our investors' money ticking over as a complement to our value add multifamily. Value add multifamily might come around once every 4 or 5 months. Well, between that, can we do a sort of a debt fund that can keep investors' money compounding at 8% for a long period of time and having a bit more of a smorgasbord for people to choose from? So there are a couple of the things we're sort of branching out into over the next sort of 6 to 12 months.
So have you heard from many people that it's not a great time to be doing development? Because I've heard some people, some big heads say, hey, this is nothing I want to be doing right now. And some of them have even lost their shirt. But we're very bullish on build to rent, particularly in the markets where we're in. What's your thoughts?
Look, I think it's about how big you are. So we've got one project. It's 5 acres, 66 units. It's not like we've had that deal under contract with the seller carryback finance for over 12 months to figure out issues with the city. We're getting bids as we speak. It's 66 units. It's not 5,000 units across, you know, multiple MSAs. We're not that big bloke. We are very select in how we've chosen. And it was off market and it was seller carryback financing, all this stuff. So it's more of a, not necessarily say layup, but it's not, we're not building the Eiffel Tower, if that makes sense. Okay. So
rock and roll. All right, let's jump into the lightning round. My first question to you is, what's the best vacation you've ever taken?
About to go on it. We've got high hopes of going to Bali next week. So I'm going for 2 weeks. I'm a big surfer. I can't wait to get there surfing every single day for 14 days.
Beautiful. Favorite book of any kind?
Key Person of Influence, Dan Priestley.
Interesting. I haven't heard that one. How much of your success do you attribute to mindset?
A lot of it. Over 80% of it.
How long do you want to live?
Till I'm 110.
Nice. All right. Best way to raise capital from your perspective? Short answer on that.
Building a personal brand.
Okay, I love that. Can you tell me about a moment that changed the trajectory of your life?
Getting on a plane and flying to America.
Love it. All right, what about this? What would you need in order to 10X your business?
The dick answer is I'm already 10Xing it as it is compared to where I've come from. Do I need to 10X it from now? Maybe, but I got the recipe to know how to do it. So I'm living it right now. I don't know if there's one thing. It's just keep doing what I'm doing, keep putting probably a mindset of like, it's going to happen. Like, it doesn't need to happen tomorrow, but it's going to happen eventually. So maybe it's just like a chill out. It will be okay, so to speak. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes business can be, it reminds me of a podcast. It starts really slow and then after a while it just goes by itself and you just get out of the way. So that's pretty cool. All right. What about this? What is a capital raising mistake that you see people doing?
I know not doing enough to educate your investors today. I've got an example of that where I first tried to raise $500,000 for a deal back in 2013, thinking I'm just going to go out. I've got 50 people on the little CRM that I started built, and it was crickets. And it was a very cold shower to remind you got to continually put content out. You got to continually educate people in your network, as big or as small as it might be, to tell people what you're doing. And there will be that cold shower. The first deal you get, you're going to go raise money for, you're going to go do, your investors are going to scatter like cockroaches. But it takes the next rep and the third rep and the fifth rep and the 10th rep. You just have to know that it's going to take time, but you've got to do that first one and have that cold shower, because everyone thinks they can raise capital, but it's a hard skill to do. And you got to constantly always be raising capital.
Yeah, baby. Okay, cool. Couple more questions. Do your spiritual philosophies have anything to do with your success in business?
Not religious spiritually, but more grounded spiritually, if that makes sense. Being self-aware. So yes, it has played a massive, meditation has played a big role, bigger role, I should say, in recent years because of everything that's coming at me at a million miles an hour. Just to be honest, mental calmness is really important.
Have you ever experienced a miracle or had a near-death experience?
So not near-death experience, but I have two of my immediate family members have passed away, which has put my life into perspective of what I'm chasing and what I'm doing.
All right, last question brought to you by Shanna Amigo, one of our great listeners. She would like to know, what impact would you like to leave in the world?
I would like to leave an impact of sustainability as best I can, as little as I, whatever that might be. That's as low, that might be retrofitting all my properties to have solar and low flow toilets. Something of like being more sustainable, leaving a property that I find it and being a more sustainable condition than what I bought it at.
Excellent. Very cool answers on the lightning round. Shout out to the Capital Raiser Nation. Thanks for tuning in. Please leave us a 5-star written review. Shout out to the Family Office Club and Invest Next. Reed, how does the audience get a hold of you, my friend?
ReedGoossens.com. That's ReedGoossens. It will take you to our, you can invest with us. You can listen to the podcast. You can buy books. You can just hang out with me. If you're ever coming through Los Angeles and you want to meet up for a coffee or a beer, hit me up at info@ReedGoossens.com.
Okay. Tell me about the books that you wrote real quick.
10,000 Miles to the American Dream, just there. Investing in the US, The Ultimate Guide to US Real Estate, just there. This book, or the first book, which was Investing in the US, was literally just first 50 episodes of my podcast in book form with my story woven between the chapters. This book was written with 7 other Aussies, all moved 10,000 miles across the globe to start real estate businesses here in the US, all different types of real estate businesses. So different perspective is what we really bring to the table and what it's written from. So both of them got some pretty funny things in there. Aussieisms in this one. And we've got some pretty cool caricatures over there in that one. So get your hands on it if you can. It's all on Amazon.com and just search my name.
How was the process of actually writing the book? Did you struggle with that at all? Or?
This one, the first book, was I wrote it and it read like a textbook. I'm a former engineer, and I had to bring in an editor to like really make it readable. That took the longest. This one was a lot easier because we hired the editor straight from day one. Mm. But also I shared the writing with 7 other people. So it was, to create a whole book, it was less work. I did repurpose it from the podcast, which I highly recommend, but that repurposing, when I did it myself, I'm not the expert of writing. I sort of laid the skeleton, and then I needed to bring someone in over the top to really, really, really like make it, tie a bow around it and make it a presentable, readable thing that people want to keep reading that next chapter, not just going, oh God, this is boring as watching paint dry. So, awesome. Yeah.
Awesome, Reed. Any last words of wisdom for the aspiring capital raiser or syndicator as they scale on their journey?
Look, always be a student. Keep learning. Never think you know it all. There's always something new to learn. I think shout out to my dad. He always used to say, a fool and their money are easily parted. Don't be that fool. Continue to educate yourself on any aspect of the business as you grow. Being curious about it is really, really important.
Awesome. 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 What's the name of your podcast? One more time.
Investing in the US.
Yeah, I was a guest on that show a while back. So
you were.
Go back and leave Reed a 5-star written review as well.
Awesome,
All right,
brother.
Dude, man, this has been amazing having you on. I really appreciate you coming on, bro.
Be well. Talk soon.